Support for the show comes from Atlassian. Having trouble getting things done at work? You're not alone. Maybe in order to unlock amazing outcomes, it's time to stop looking up and down for answers and instead start looking across. What do we mean by that? The companies with the fastest speed to market tend to be the ones that look across the organization rather than up and down the hierarchy. Stay tuned to hear how Atlassian software like Confluence, Jira, and Loom can help maximize effective teamwork in your organization. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Support for Pivot comes from ServiceNow. By now, you've probably heard about AI. You might even be sick of hearing about it. But despite all the hype, it's not always clear how AI can help your business. ServiceNow has some ideas. With their intelligent platform, they can put AI to work across your company, improving customer experiences, helping non-coders code, accelerating your IT team's productivity, and resolving HR cases faster. So work can actually work better for everyone. So stop the hype and start putting AI to work. Go to servicenow.com/genAI to see why the world works with ServiceNow.
Hi, everyone. This is Pivot from New York Magazine and the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Kara Swisher.
And I'm Scott Galloway.
Scott, you didn't work out this morning. You're complaining before we got on.
You know, gun show is not in town today, and it pisses right. Daddy. I need the exercise. I need the norepinephrine. I need to feel young.
What is your exercise routine for the people who might want to know, not me?
I do CrossFit four times a week for the last decade, and I've worked out four times a week for the last 40 years. It's not easy being a four on a scale of 1 to 10. It takes real work.
Do you have like a coach of CrossFit, or do you have a gang of CrossFitters?
Oh my God, I got a coach, I got a community, I got a doctor who's prescribed me testosterone.
Oh, nice.
I've got a diet that's crazy.
I am coming down there. Do I have to do this, or can I sleep late in law and eat donuts?
Oh, no, it's wonderful. We do it outside. It's wonderful. You'll like it a lot.
I'm not doing CrossFit. There's no way. I once saw a bunch.
Well, I do old man CrossFit.
Which is what?
It's more like cross wimp.
I saw this bunch of Silicon Valley people in Manhattan Beach do it, and they were like dragging like pipes, like full of sand across the beach. I found it ridiculous.
Yeah, I used to do it with a bunch of young people, specifically lesbian firefighters and bartenders on HGH.
I could maybe do that.
And I just could not compete. I just could not compete. So it got too intense for me. So now I do it.
So it was feats of strength. You couldn't keep up with the lesbian firefighters.
On a lot of levels, Kara.
They're a tough bunch of mothers.
I'm being very serious here.
I am too.
When I wrote my book on happiness, I think really I'm very, very serious. I struggle with anger and depression. It's my antidepressant. And also, the only thing I've ever found that is anything resembling a youth serum is exercise.
Yeah, you're 100%. I try to do it, but I, of course, never get to do it because I have so many children. Speaking of children, do you know I adopted my daughter this week officially?
I don't even know what that means.
Gay people are not automatically parents. So continued, because of all kinds of things.
Well, it's a perversion, Cal. It's a perversion.
Well, anyway,
if Almeca had wanted two women to have a child.
All right. When Claire was born in New York, which I wasn't aware of because you were allowed to do this in San Francisco, if you're not married at the time, and we got married soon after, you do not get on the birth certificate. And that is not the case in San Francisco. That wasn't the
case.
And so they literally walked in. They're like, you can't be on the birth. It was such a shock because it was like being slapped back 20 years ago, much like what's going on in Arkansas.
But
now it's fixed. DC granted me parentage, whatever you call it. Parental.
Do you want me to be the dad? I worked out four times a week.
No, you need a dad. We're our own
little
family.
You want a little daddy on the birth certificate?
No. We have Kara Swisher on the birth certificate.
If
you give me any trouble, the lesbian firefighters will be there to help you understand this thing.
I'll be the adopted dad there.
No, you cannot.
She's a cutie.
She is a cutie. She's a sweetheart, too. Anyway, that is what happened to me.
Well, so
that is my happiness this
week.
That's
total bullshit that you even have to do that. I didn't even know what you meant. That seems so ridiculous.
Yes, it is ridiculous. But here we are. It was very expensive. It was onerous. And you have to, you know, adopt your own child, which is like, which we went
insane.
In and had the kid with fully intention of having the kid together.
That's totally insane.
You should have seen the piles of legal documents that you sent for my other kids.
And is this because,
it's crazy.
Is this because of the adoption end of it, or because it's two women who are the parents?
You know what? We're not presumed, even if you go into it with intent, you have to be now married. And it's just the whole thing is so ridiculous that straight people take for granted every day of their lives. And so it's an interesting situation. And what was good, though, it was, you know, you see heartening things like the Department of Defense rolling back the trans rules that bans that Trump put in place, and all the DOD people were tweeting it out, which was great. And they did all kinds of studies. And of course, 20 plus countries have trans people serving in their military without any problem. And we're back to them now, which is amazing. It's just, it continues. And the Arkansas thing, it just continues. My son was shocked by that. He was like, what? You can't get treatment in Arkansas if they don't want to? I was sort of like, yes. Like, what do you want me to say? Anyway, this is not meant to be a big giant gay rights rally, but I'm very happy about adoption.
There is I think the thing that's been most, I would say, upsetting about the last, call it 5 years since Trump was elected, was not even the policies of Trump, but that, and I use the analogy of the comedian Michelle Wolf, that we'd heard mom was an alcoholic in college, but mm-hmm. you know, now mom is mom and she's great. And then we're at church on Sunday and her purse bursts open and 40 mini bottles of Jack come flying out. And we go, oh my God, mom's still an alcoholic. I think the American public has had this sort of cold comfort that if racist, homophobic people are exposed to people with different demographics, to people with different sexual orientation, that over time, everyone generally gets better. I think we sort of, that was very comforting, that we have a really ugly past, but every day it gets better. And then it feels like the last 5 years,
this group
of people who did not want to get better kind of came out of the closet and we took a big giant step backwards.
So it's really
discouraging. It felt like the first time, I think kind of the first time America like took a giant step backwards, so to speak. It was just weird. Realizing.
They're right. I have always said they're sitting around the edges waiting for a minute.
I think a lot of us didn't realize they were there.
Oh, I do. I'm always aware of that. Especially, you know, in my case, it's anti-gay stuff, but I am constantly aware of it. And it's just, it's insidious. And now I have to think about states I don't want to go to. I didn't used to think about it. Did and then didn't. And then it's crazy. Speaking of the Army, the Microsoft won an Army contract to build a custom augmented reality headset.
$21 billion.
Microsoft now has two. They had the one that they won from Amazon that Trump kind of pushed away from Amazon. The device does things like overlay a map and compass and thermal imaging to show people in the dark. It also shows the aim for a weapon. It's sort of bringing video games. And this is stuff that's been in the movies, which is interesting, but now is here. A significant source of revenue for futuristic projects. Amazon and Microsoft competed for contracts to provide cloud services for the military. Microsoft won that, and I think it's still in court. Microsoft employees complained, we didn't sign up to develop weapons, of course. The Army argues that the technology helps the military be more accurate and prevents killing of civilians. Anyway, it's, you know, Microsoft is staying in the defense business. It's a big business, as you said. There's lots of areas like healthcare, but defense certainly is an area that tech has not been as dominant in. And of course, Elon got a space contract over the big space people, the aerospace industry. So it's just more of this, more of this. What do you think? What do you think of this?
Well, I mean, this was staggering. This is potentially.
We talked about Microsoft killing it. That's not the way you should put it.
Well, it's interesting. So, on a number of levels, so VR, everyone's like, okay, VR is the ultimate application for gaming or for porn or for
AR,
real estate
or
whatever you want to call it. And it's like, no, it's not. If you look at revenues, the killer app for AR is warfare.
Yeah.
And the fact that our military is committing up to, I mean, you realize that this contract is almost as big as the revenues of Tesla. This contract, just the AR contract for Microsoft, is now a bigger business in isolation than Pinterest, Snap, and Twitter combined. $21 billion is real cabbage.
Yep, it really is.
And I wonder if it's one of those things where a massive investment by the government and the military, similar to DARPA or something, finally takes VR, AR kind of to a tipping point and it starts to leak down or melt into the consumer economy.
I've always been very bearish on VR. I've read various and sundry where they're playing video games when they're doing drone stuff. And it's already moved in this direction. And I think more so in the future, there's going to be this sort of, not just, there's cyber warfare and then there's warfare using these augmented reality things. And it makes sense if we have this in real life that they're going to, you know, they're going to put this into the military. It'll be interesting to see, you know, which employees don't want to do this. I think every tech, you know, Google got a real pushback from its employees working for the Defense Department, obviously Amazon with ICE and stuff like that. But these companies, this is a huge opportunity for all these companies.
Well, not only that, but they just went in response to employees complaining they didn't go to work for, mm-hmm. you know, a company to sell into the military. They just basically send out a memo that says, dear employees, grow the fuck up.
Yep.
I mean, yep. The U.S., yep. The protections and the liberties we enjoy are directly correlated to the sacrifices and resources we provide our young men. Even if you don't agree with bad wars or whatever, the notion that any company of this size isn't ultimately going to somehow directly or indirectly work with the government and with our defense, it's, I don't know, grow up. It sucks to be a grown up. Sucks for you.
True, but I think Google is not going to be able to work for Ben and Jerry's or Birkenstock. I think Google is not going to do that pushback. I think they got enormous pushback around a lot of stuff.
$22 billion?
It's a management thing. They're going to have to figure out a way to manage it or move employees who don't mind over to it. These employees have power, you know. It's not unlike
vocal minority.
Amazon warehouse workers.
Vocal minority.
Okay. That may be. But they should provide for you don't have to work on it if you don't want to.
Yeah.
They should. They're not going to make people do it. There's no way Silicon Valley is going to do that.
I agree.
Anyway, also an area you totally shifting to a different area. Compass yesterday, before its IPO, cut the valuation in half. It announced it wants to go public at a valuation of $7 billion instead of the original $10 billion. That's not quite half. So talk about this. This is something you wanted to talk about today. But I use Compass to buy my houses, which is interesting. But
really?
I use regular real estate agent, not in their technological way. But explain for the people why this what this indicates.
This is muy interesante because it's sort of, I call these companies Rich Little companies. Remember Rich Little? He used to impersonate people. He was a great, he used to go on Johnny Carson.
I thought he was great.
This is, SoftBank is sort of famous for pretending that a company is a tech company. And remember, we as a tech
company work
as a service. Mm-hmm. And essentially Compass is trying to position itself as a tech company.
They are.
And it's not.
I use a living, breathing person, but go ahead.
Well, you could argue that it's tech-enabled, but essentially 78% of the revenues are commissions paid out to humans called brokers.
Right.
And they've adopted a capital as a strategy, and that is they're spending more money than their peer group, which, by the way, can work. When Amazon spent more money, had access to cheap capital, and then leveraged that incredible storytelling of Jeff Bezos to get cheap capital, that they then made these massive investments as long as their investors would tolerate losses, which was longer than any other company in history. But when you invest tens of billions of dollars in warehouses, the warehouses won't pick up and leave and go across the street the moment someone else offers them a higher wage, which is what brokers will. Well, and they're some of the most coin-operated people in the world. Essentially Compass has done is said to these individuals, we'll give you all of your commissions, not half, to come over here. And they made some acquisitions. But it's basically a roll-up strategy of traditional brokerages based on capital as a strategy. There's some tech, but here's
the
thing.
Talk about their tech, the thing they try to sell. Like, I know that's their big push, and I was always like, aren't you just a real estate broker?
I don't know. It feels like a broker holding an iPad, as far as I can tell. But I will say this. A colleague of mine, Foster Provost at NYU Stern, is this incredibly bright data guy who's worked for the biggest telcos in the world, and he works full-time or almost full-time at Compass. So there's clearly something there around analytics. But here's the problem. It's about valuation. And then that is, if you look at Realogy, they do about $6 billion in revenues, and their market cap is $1.5 billion. So they trade at about 0.25 times revenues. And then there's Redfin, which does about, and then there's Zillow, which does about $3 billion in revenues and has a $30 billion market. They trade at 10 times because that's generally an online real estate media company. And also they're in iBuying now. And it's run by an incredibly impressive CEO.
And then selling all kinds of things off to the side.
That's right.
And moving
so,
and
And so the valuation here is somewhere between 0.25 if you're a traditional revenues or traditional real estate company and 10 times if you're a tech company. So the S1 is trying to say, for God's sakes, we're rich little, we're tech. And the reality is, I don't think the market buys it. And they're trying to go out, even with this reduced valuation, they're trying to go out at 2 to 3 times revenues as opposed to 0.25, which is where traditional brokers go. So I think this is, it's interesting. Goldman is running the book and Goldman is very good at creating demand. So I'm remiss to make a prediction that the stock won't do well.
But you think retail investors think this is like the second coming of real estate.
And not only that, this smells a lot like another real estate company that had entered into consensual hallucination with the marketplace around its valuation. And that's another SoftBank-backed company in real estate, WeWork. Now that's
which
totally
is coming
flipped.
Back in a better way. Yep.
Yeah. So, and this kind of goes, this will go to my prediction, but it feels, this feels eerily reminiscent, a company pretending to be a tech company such that they can get a much higher valuation than is warranted. Yeah. And the market has learned here. The market is regurgitating. It's supposed to go public this morning. It'll price. Yeah. Goldman
we'll
is the best in the world at creating institutional demand and filling the book to make sure that the IPO is successful. But they've cut the price several times. Whereas if you look at Airbnb and these other guys, they kept raising the price range.
Yeah.
So this
people know what a duck is. Duck is a duck.
There you go.
It's a duck. It's a duck with an iPad. All right. So we're going to move on to our big story.
Like that. That's good.
We're going to move on to our big story. This week, Biden detailed his $2 trillion infrastructure plan. How many zeros is that? That's bigger than the entire federal government budget. He calls it a once-in-a-generation investment, the largest since World War II, since we built the highway system and since the space race. It will require 15 years of higher taxes on corporations, raising the rates from 21% to 28%. He's giving $50 billion to boost the domestic chip industry, a big boost to electric cars. He promised faster internet and better transit, electric charging station. It imagines a different energy future. Second part of the plan invests in human infrastructure, aid to the poor, paid leave, help with childcare. The plan also includes Right to Organize Act to counter right to work laws. There's also train stuff with Amtrak wants, which they put out a fantastic map that essentially says, screw you, Christine Noem. It totally avoids her state. This is long overdue. And let me just say, I did an interview with Mariana Mazzucato, who talked about this idea of government doing these important moonshots in areas like climate change or infrastructure. But can it ever pass? This is big.
I think this is wonderful. I think it's just wonderful.
Me too.
We are the apex species. The business model of our species responsible for our success is capitalism. And the ballast and the success of capitalism is a robust middle class. And slowly but surely, Kara, slowly but surely, we have increased Social Security taxes and payroll taxes and individual income taxes, and we have reduced corporate income taxes to the point where only $1 in $12 versus $1 in $2 of receipts from the government come from corporate taxes versus individual income taxes. So essentially, what we've said is, corporations, you pay less, and individuals, you pay more, and we continue one of the most dangerous trends in our society, where we've decided we don't like people, but we love corporations. And what happens? What happens? When the Trump tax cuts went through from 38 to 21% in 2017, I was on a board of a media company and a board of a retailer, both multi-billion dollar companies. And all of a sudden in the board meeting, we're like, oh my gosh, what's the earnings and the cash flow surprise? All of a sudden, it's like huge. And it's like, well, it's the advantageous tax cuts. And what did we do with that money? Did we hire more people?
Did we invest in factories?
No, we used it for share buybacks or cash on our balance sheet, which does what? It juices the stock price. Mm-hmm. And by the way, who owns 90% of stocks by dollar volume? The top 1%.
Yeah.
So all we have done with increasing the tax liabilities of individuals as a percentage of our government. And by the way, as a percentage of total tax receipts, individual taxes have not gone up. We've just funded it with taxes on your daughter for when she's old enough to be a taxpayer. We've racked up massive debt.
Mean to my daughter.
We have just transferred slowly but surely wealth, which is nothing. Money is just a transfer of time and work. So we have said we want the top 1% or shareholders to work less and spend more time with their families, such that the middle class and future generations can spend less time with their families. It is criminal what's gone on here.
This is like the Republicans are trying to put it off as a goodie bag, but this is the kind of big thinking, the big LBJ Great Society, the FDR. This is the, I kind of like it. He went for broke. Now, interestingly, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was on the things they needed even more, but this was as much as they said it was going to be, which it never is, right?
That's one thing. It'll get clipped back. He's starting clipped back,
but he didn't back down first. People were, I think, surprised by the breadth of this, like go for it. And what was really interesting was how it's going to be paid. I think there's nobody against taxing corporations, even though they lobbyists, but I think it's a great populist thing for him. It put money in lots of really interesting places. It has an innovative element, $50 billion to boost domestic chip industry, right. Cars, better trains, better, human infrastructure, the idea of paid leave and help with childcare. Mm-hmm. We should have full childcare. That should be something we should do, but whatever. We hate children and women in this country in a lot of ways. But this is very breathful. It'd be interesting to how you pass it, though. How do you get this passed? And the arguments about too much debt. Obviously, there's a big climate plan in here, too. So there's all kinds of things to like for different people. And it's also a lot of things that people who are worried about debt and other things do not like.
Yeah, so again, infrastructure. What is infrastructure? Infrastructure is an investment in the middle class, because when the J train is only running every 2 hours instead of every 15 minutes from Brooklyn into the city, who gets hurt? Yeah. The assistant or the secretary, and not the executive gets to take an Uber or kind of figures it out or has a driver. So infrastructure is an investment in the middle class. It's also an investment in brand building. I remember the first time I went to China, I flew into the new Hong Kong airport, and then I went to the Shanghai airport, and I'm like, Jesus, these people take themselves very seriously.
Yeah, Singapore airport.
And then I fly into JFK, and I think, Jesus Christ, are there chickens and goats running around here? It felt like...
It's true.
What happened?
Oh my God, you're right.
What happened to us? And the infrastructure is...
Same thing with train stations. Like, they're making a big deal, this new New York one. I'm like, Penn Station's been a pit my entire life. And now they have a train station. They're like, yay, that sort of reaches basic levels with Europe. Basic, like not even as nice as Europe one still.
Penn Station really is supposedly one of the great architectural crimes in history, especially it was beautiful. And then they tore it down to make this just disgusting architectural.
It's not even charming in its grossness. Yeah. Like some things that are like old and broken down are charming.
Are you talking about me again? Do you know I do CrossFit?
Penn Station is the worst place on earth. Yeah. I'm surprised I'm not dead having been in there 900 times.
Yeah, I'm not a big Penn Station fan.
I had a little side train rant there.
Yeah, no, we love airports. Anyone who's been to Europe loves trains, even though they make no economic sense whatsoever. But look, infrastructure is an investment in the country, and it's an investment in the middle class, because the people who really need roads and public transportation are the middle
Internet
class.
Access.
And oh my gosh, broadband. I think a bridge too far here is they're now claiming that social programs that feel very UBI-like are infrastructure investments.
Yeah.
But I love this. And the swing back to protecting and loving Americans as opposed to American corporations is long overdue. The problem they're going to face is they're going to have to figure out either multinational tax treaties or some sort of crazy punishment for companies that decide to do an inversion. And that is, overnight they said, well, we have an Amsterdam office, we'll just make our headquarters Amsterdam because they have lower tax rates.
Yeah.
Because now if you add up all the taxes with this increase to 28, the average tax rate on corporations will be 33%, making it the highest of any OECD country. Even though it'll only make up probably 10 or 11% of our total tax receipts, it'll still be an issue they have to face. What happens when these companies decide to do these inversions? That's still a big issue.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see if they do that. There's always that we're going to go somewhere else. We'll go. Go ahead.
Well, the problem is some have. I don't know.
Some have. But,
I mean, an inversion is nothing different. They just file paperwork and say our headquarters are now in the Isle of Man.
Yeah, it just is not a good look for companies. I don't know.
They don't care.
An interesting question.
They don't care.
We'll see if pushing corporations to do things is really interesting. What happened with Delta and Coca-Cola suddenly in Georgia post these voter laws passing, to say, oh, we really think we hate them after not seeming to do anything before. We don't know what goes on behind the scenes.
Well, Tim Cook came out against it.
He did too. Yeah. They all did. Yeah, they're all doing it. But it's post. They should have poured some money in there during the making of it, but there was nothing to do. Now, what's really interesting is instead of just dealing with it, the Georgia Senate is trying to clap back at Delta. Good luck, my friends. The Republican Party really doesn't want corporate money, I guess. That's really what's going on here. They just don't want, they want to be the party of, they want to give the corporations over to the Democrats in terms of donations and everything else. It's really quite odd what's happening there. We'll see what goes on. All right, Scott, this is really, we like this plan. Scott and Kara love this plan, correct?
Infrastructure.
I can't believe you don't like trains. You like trains, don't you?
No, no, I love train travel. They're just, it's just incredibly expensive. I mean, it's awesome. It is. Really, economically, the only...
I'm going to get on, as soon as I get my next vaccine, I'm going to get on an Amtrak.
The only feasible high-speed rail, really, is up the Northeastern Corridor and maybe like LA to Vegas.
But, and it's still gross. It's still gross. You know how much it costs to go from New York to DC right now on the Amtrak?
$343?
$19.
I was close. I was close.
$19.
That's why they
it's
come
incredible.
To the dog.
It's usually, you know, at the least it's 69 or 70 when you get it way in advance and, you know, you sit in the shitty section, although they're all shitty sections.
Amtrak is 19. Literally like the brand has gotten so bad and tired, it's almost sort of cute.
It's so pretty. It's so cute. Not nice. They're not nice trains. Anyway, I'm sorry, Amtrak, but I used to ride it a lot before the pandemic and I will continue to ride it. But boy, you got it.
I met my hero on Amtrak.
Who?
Marguerite Vestiaire.
Oh,
she
did you?
She was knitting. That's she was knitting. Nice. And I went up to her and said, can I have a selfie? She was very friendly.
I just did an event with her. She's looking good.
Yeah.
Let me just say, I did a Zoom thing with her recently. She's looking good. She wasn't knitting during the event.
Yeah.
What did you say to her?
I went up and I said, I'm a huge fan. And she looked up at me and I thought some like Nordic CIA agent was going to tackle me. And she like had this huge smile and she stood up and I took a selfie with her. I never do that.
Yeah.
But I think she's a gangster. I think she's fantastic.
Well, I'll bring her on the show.
Here we go. Yeah, yeah. And I'm going to buy you that rabbit code. Do we have to go back to my old jokes?
What would you do if I told you I have Anderson Cooper to come on Sway?
I'd feel jealous because I'm the one that's supposed to reach out to
him.
And I'm building up to that.
Sorry to tell you.
He's coming on fucking Sway. Don't even say that. Don't even go there. Seriously. Don't even go there. If he shows up.
Fools! Ah, I got you. Actually, I have Don Lemon coming on with his book.
Don Lemon.
Yeah, I'm not going to ask. Anderson is a bridge too far, though I certainly would love to have him on Sway, but I won't do it. I got you, didn't I? I got you. You thought for a minute because you thought I could get him, right? Correct? Yeah, I get you?
You know better than to go there.
It was a good April Fool's, wasn't it?
That's right, it's April
you
Fool's.
You did. You could see your face. Nobody can see his face, but he was like, has she betrayed me? The final betrayal? Who else would be a betrayal? Who? Anderson Cooper.
I don't know. We've had Fareed Zakaria. If you got Angela Merkel, she's another hero of mine. That would be very upsetting.
Well, that might happen. Then I'm not going to give you Angela, but I will give you Ando. Ando is yours and forever and always.
You know what? I'm emailing him today or texting him because we have each other's phone number. And we use emojis.
I'm so excited.
That was good.
Scott, Fine. Let's go on a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about Facebook's latest defense and Trump's failed hack.
Fox Creative.
This is advertiser content from Atlassian.
The universal truth with our customers is they're all struggling to get stuff done. Our goal is how do we help them unleash the potential of their people, their teams, and their technology to actually get the right things done at the right time with the right people the right way. And when we do that, magical things truly happen.
Dom Price is Atlassian's work futurist. It's his job to help Atlassian customers imagine more effective ways to work.
It's completely natural to focus on what you can control in your team. The problem is if that's all you do, you get pretty myopic. The best teams I'm working with, they really work on who are the people upstream and downstream that we need to work with. How do we get flow across the organization? How do we get value into the hands of our customers quickly?
And sometimes achieving flow means that instead of asking who do I work for, it's asking who do I work with.
When you get team connection right, everyone benefits, the employee, the employer, and the customer, right? To get stuff done, the best organizations and teams right now are focusing on modern work. They're dreaming about the future, but they're dreaming about it by planting the seed to get the right things done right now.
Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom enable teams to work effectively together to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Learn more at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Constant Contact. If you're a business owner, you already know that it's really, really hard to cut through the noise of everyday life. If you want to connect with your customers, you need to break through the noise. You need Constant Contact. Constant Contact is a marketing platform that makes it easy to reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and connect over email, text, social media, and more. Whether you're a marketing guru or just learning the ropes, Constant Contact offers writing assistance tools and automation features that make it simple to say the right thing at the right time. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Scott, we're back.
We are back.
Nick Clegg, Facebook's Vice. You're still getting over my April Fool's joke.
I can't think
Nick
about Clegg. Anything else. I'm still kind of shaking.
Oh, come on. I would never do that to you. I really wouldn't.
Yeah.
Scott, we're back. Nick Clegg, Facebook's Vice President of Global Affairs, published a Medium post saying Facebook doesn't promote extreme content and unveiling some changes for users. Meanwhile, Trump tried a new trick to get back on the site. In his post, Clegg writes, Facebook systems were not designed to reward provocative comment because advertisers don't want to appear next to extreme content. Does this seem plausible? He says the overwhelming number of things people see are about pets, babies, and vacations. He went on about that for a little bit, mm-hmm. also in an interview with Casey Newton. He also argues, which really makes no sense, that pushing extreme content would only be a short-term strategy, a sugar rush, as he puts it, but they want to keep people coming back for 10, 20 years. So why would they do it? Facebook is introducing a feed filter bar to make some of the controls like display chronological order more prominent and other ways to do that. He says they're also trying to make the algorithm more transparent by allowing you to click on three dots and ask, why am I seeing this on any content, which should have been there in the friggin' first place. But anyway, so I'll get to Trump in a second. What do you, Nick Clegg is a clever man, but goodness sake, what do you think?
So I'm going to go out on a limb here.
All right.
And suggest that Nick Clegg is not being 100% forthcoming with us.
But he's charming.
Charming
British man.
He's a handsome British guy. I think I met him at Cannes.
But you didn't take a selfie with him like Marguerite Vestager.
Oh, no way.
His sworn enemy, by the way. Go ahead.
Oh, really? I don't even understand this from a PR strategy. I think that they should release data that shows that. But
yeah.
Any individual that has a Facebook card, the immediate assumption is you're a liar, you're trading your reputation for money, and that you are essentially the nemesis of the Commonwealth, and that you are the fuel and the agent of teen depression, the weaponization of our democracy, and a general lack of regard for other human beings. Welcome to Facebook. That's the kind of the employee handbook.
Yeah, it was an interesting thing. I think they're trying to pull on. There's two things that I will give them that I agree with them, is that polarization did not start with Facebook. There's lots of studies, and it's a mixed bag on these things of where polarization's been in existence forever. It's the fueling of it. It's the constant fueling of it. And even his whole thing was like, when you go to your site and you see your friends fighting with each other or your family or this or that, mm-hmm. that's not what's really happening. And I'm like, well, then show the stuff. Then show the stuff. Let independent researchers in there. And then, of course, we have these arguments about data, keeping data safe and this and that. And so they keep promising to open it up more so you can see what's happening, but mm-hmm. said, just take our word for it, I think, is what he was kind of doing here. And nobody's taking their word for it. I think opening up the data to independent people and not fucking with it would be a really important thing. I do agree with them. Why would you want extreme content on there? I do think it's like a pernicious kudzu, essentially. They can't stop it. I don't think they want it necessarily. I think that argument that they want it is not true. It's not good for them. But it certainly is, and it's not good for advertisers. But this idea, then show me that. He started talking about with Casey, a bear, a mother bear. I was like, that is not what people experience of Facebook is, if you just delve down very quickly. So, and some of this stuff to let people filter things more, essentially make your own Facebook, are interesting, but long overdue. I don't know. I don't understand it. Why do you think he did this now? What is the impetus?
I had trouble processing anything after you said pernicious kudzu.
Completely. You're still getting
that is
my
really
Fool's
good.
Joke. In any case,
really,
I don't
understand.
You
wouldn't actually invite Anderson, right? I just want to confirm
no,
that you
know.
Okay,
I will not
so
invite
look,
Anderson
look,
Cooper.
Nothing. Nobody believes anything Facebook says anymore. They should, if they have data to back that up, they should release the data. But the general rule when you become a senior executive, whether you're Campbell Brown or Nick Clegg, is like you have had a great career building a lot of credibility. we're Donald Trump. We're gonna ruin your credibility for a long, long time, but we're gonna pay a lot of money, and so it's worth it. And people make that trade. The whole argument around this is the Jack Dorsey argument that unfortunately the internet is bad and we just represent the internet.
And that's
eerily similar to guns don't kill people, people kill people.
It does feel like that.
And it's just,
it?
You know, actually you have made things worse and you're so powerful. That you deserve scrutiny. And by the way, it all adds up to just a bad place. Who is the new biggest spender on lobbying? It used to be big oil. It used to be big tobacco. Now it's big tech. And what do these companies have in common? Generally speaking, their externalities are really awful.
It's going to be, it's an interesting thing that they continue to, I get why they do push back, but at the same time, you can't have a cogent argument with them because you just don't believe them. It's like a bad boyfriend. You're like, no, you're lying.
The solution here.
Even if they're not.
Look, there is good in Facebook. I know a lot of people at Facebook that are really good people and I think are genuine about trying to do the right thing. Yeah. This company will never have any credibility. This company will never be able to pivot to being a decent citizen until two things happen. Mark Zuckerberg and Sheryl Sandberg leave. Cancer and lipstick on cancer roll out of there. And people say, well, that'll never happen. Then Facebook will never be taken seriously for any attempt at goodwill. Enough already.
It's interesting.
That's the only thing they could do. If shareholders really said, all right, this is an amazing business.
They're not going to. They're making a ton of money. They're not going to do it.
I agree.
Meanwhile, Trump's daughter-in-law, Lara, some would like Kara, but not, totally opposite.
You two remind me of each other.
Wrote an interview with him on her Facebook and Instagram account. Facebook nixed it, saying it was in the voice of Trump and was not allowed, which was interesting. Probably virtue signaling here. And Lara got all mad, saying we're in the age of Orwell. She's such a sneaker. She sneaks around things. Give her credit for that, I guess, which was interesting. And then in the interview with Case Newton, Clegg talked about what's going to happen with the Facebook decision. They're going to have to abide by it. They're bound by it. You'll see how sophisticated it is because Trump also broke all these rules. So it's going to, you know, he can't get a full pardon here at the same time. The board can't give him a full pardon if he keeps breaking the rules. He said it's going to bind them, which is interesting. So what do you think of this, the Trump situation? Maybe it's not going to be as important to Trump going forward.
I literally think one of the biggest tax cuts we've ever registered emotionally. And I do understand that there's some danger to this. And even Bernie Sanders seemed concerned about a ban of Trump. Having less Trump in our lives, and I say this as, you know, I guess a progressive, but my life's been much nicer the last 8 weeks, hasn't your life?
Yes, and his people can get his stuff. That's, by the way, if they want it, they can have Trump all day. There's all ways to avail yourself to Trump if you really miss him.
If you can get yourself some Trump.
This decision's coming at some point. It'll be interesting to see what happens here. But, you know, this idea of them sneaking around, like they're allowing like interviews if he did 60 Minutes, but Lara's they have a group that they're like, these are his promoters, like his family members, and they can't try to do a walk around. He tried to do that after he was banned from Twitter and Twitter shut everything down. Like they were trying to get Dan Scavino and others tried to put his tweets up and this and that. And they haven't really tried on Twitter, because then you'll get right.
I don't understand all the hand wringing over this. I heard about this guy who went into One Medical. I love One Medical, and someone asked him to put on a mask, and he flipped off the person, and they banned him from all of One Medical. And I'm like, okay, they're allowed to do that.
I
think that's a good move. And maybe it's wrong. I don't know. Maybe it was freedom of speech. I don't understand. They're a private company. Why all this hand-wringing? And when they decide, you know, we're so important that we've evolved to the point where any time we ban or don't ban someone, it's a question of free speech and societal. It means they're too powerful and they need to be regulated. So I just don't understand why a private company needs to all this hand-wringing. Okay, is our service, is shareholder value, is our health for the world better without these elements on our platform? And if the answer is yes, okay, that's all they need to answer to. I don't
They certainly can do it, which is sort of goes against Nick's idea that they can't. He didn't really cover that in this piece. Anyway, we're going to move on and take a listener mail question. I agree with you. I think it'll be interesting to see. We're going to be talking about this issue, because I know it's near and dear to your heart, cancel culture, but I'm going to call it what Roxane Gay calls it, consequence culture. We'll discuss what that means on Monday. That was my ha-ha. Yeah. It's consequence culture. It's not cancel culture, for fuck's sake. Anyway, moving on. Let's take a listener mail question.
Okay. You've got.
I can't believe I'm going to be a mailman.
You've got mail.
Hey, Karen Scott. First off, Kara, congratulations on the adoption being official. Blessings to you and your beautiful family. I'm sure y'all have seen the latest research from Gallup saying those who claim membership in a church or faith community has dropped below 50% in the USA. As a United Methodist clergyperson in Dallas, I have many questions about this, but my question for y'all is, do you see this as a rise in secularization or a general evolution from membership to subscription where people are consuming spirituality much like they do media? If so, what does a faith rundle look like, Scott? How can technology benefit faith communities? And how can I get in touch with folks at WeWork or Airbnb to discuss co-working sacred space? I know a lot of spaces that are far too empty. Love your show.
Thank you for writing in this question. I am not a religious person. Mm-hmm. I grew up Catholic, but have not been inside a Catholic church since I was confirmed, I think. So this is an interesting question. What do you think, Scott? I think there's been some really fascinating stuff done online with religion over the pandemic, for example.
So I'm a rabid atheist. Atheism is mm-hmm. a core part of my being. It gives me a finite right. nature of life and motivates me. It's been a real positive in my life.
I'm an agnostic.
Agnostics are just... Agnostics are atheists that are wimps. Come out of the closet and say you're a fucking atheist. I used to say that too. I believe there's something, but I don't know which one. It's such bullshit. Anyways,
it's hard to get away from the
grow
Catholic
a pair and come
being...
to atheism. Anyways,
no, I don't. Anyways, no, I can't do
look,
it.
I think one of the most dangerous and disappointing things in our country is the decline mm-hmm. in church attendance. I grew up, my dad's been married and divorced four times, so I went to mm-hmm. a variety of religious institutions growing up, Presbyterian Church, Temple, and I think it's wonderful when people and Americans get together once every Sunday to hold hands and think about agency in something bigger than themselves, show empathy, greet their neighbor, sing together.
Physically. This isn't a physical element, not just online.
But I think church is wonderful. And I think one of the reasons we have more mass shootings, we have more depression, we have loneliness, mm-hmm. is we have lost the connective tissue between Americans. And one of the connective tissues traditionally in American society has been religion. And I don't even think of it as worship of a God. I think of it as worship of a community. And the kind of central star, if you will, or the role model started with this great viewpoint of love the poor. And it's just not a bad idea to get together every Sunday and talk mm-hmm. about how we should love the poor. I think a lot of these young men who ended up being mass shooters, I wonder what would have happened if they'd been, actually the one guy at the Agent Spa thing, come to think of it, he had a real conflict with religion. It's a complicated issue, but I would argue that church, as a society becomes more educated and wealthier, church attendance goes down. But we still have these huge questions. And unfortunately, we've replaced spirituality with this fetishization of the nearest thing to mysticism and godlike impression, and that is technology. Yeah. And instead of church attendance, instead of worshiping Jesus, and I'm a big fan of JC. I think he's a wonderful man. I do believe he existed. I just don't buy his lineage. The problem is we've replaced him with a man, effectively or theoretically, with a man who denied his own blood under oath to avoid child support payments when he was worth $250 million. That our new Jesus Christ are Jack Dorsey and Steve Jobs, and it's really unhealthy. So I think I'm a huge fan. I give money to churches.
It's actually Elon. It's funny that you picked those two. Elon's
the new Jesus. Yeah, you might be right.
Yeah.
I think it's terrible for our society. And I say that as someone who's 100% convinced that when I am about to die, I'm going to look into my kids' eyes and our relationship is coming to an end. I do not believe in an afterlife. But I think the decline in church attendance signals something really unfortunate in our society.
It does. And it plays into one of the things I've been watching an excellent series. I've mentioned it before on HBO. Into the Storm, the QAnon documentary, which I think is fantastic. Yeah. And one of the things, there's such a sad underbelly to our world. And again, it sort of plays into Nick Clegg's, it was always there, but boy, does the internet take it to new levels. You know, these 8chan and stuff like, it's disgusting and really depressing. And actually the founder of 8chan is the one that went that way. There's a point, there's a limit to free speech at some point. Yeah. Anyway, we'll see. We're not very religious, sir. I don't know. That is a good idea. We think that there should be more ability for people to get together in a community of faith, whatever they
happen
to be.
It's a huge issue that we keep talking about dispersion, and that is we're all you know, less time at work, and the evil cousin to dispersion is segregation. And it's not only segregation physically, it's segregation emotionally. And we don't interact with people when we don't see people of different demographic groups at the mall or at the movie theater.
And like schools.
Yeah.
And like schools for K through 12. Maybe not college as much, but K through 12. You really do need to be physically in place. Although I think some of
the churches— Where did you go to high school, Kara?
If I say it, you're going to say I'm like rich white person.
Oh my God, Princeton, even whiter? Did you go to Exeter or Fieldston or something?
No, I almost did though. Princeton Day School.
Princeton Day School.
And I'm going to be giving the commencement address there this year.
Good for you. That's nice. That's really nice.
Yeah, Princeton. It's a lovely private school in Princeton, New Jersey, which is already a lovely town.
A lovely private school in Princeton, New Jersey. Okay.
Yes.
From the mean streets to Princeton, New Jersey. Kara Swisher.
My streets were not mean. I am a hardworking rich person, is what I am. All right, Scott, one more quick break. We'll be back for predictions.
Hey, everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docuspecial on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
Okay, Scott, prediction time. You sort of said you had a prediction and you sort of gave us a little preview, but give it to us.
Well, I'm fascinated by the kind of the real estate tech space, and I've wanted to look more into Opendoor and Redfin and some of those guys. But I think that my prediction is WeWork, shockingly enough, is going to overperform over the next 12 months. And I think Compass is going to underperform. I think Compass really is trying to pretend to be something it isn't. And I looked through the S1 and I'm trying to understand, what about these massive investments they've made because of the cheap capital are sustainable? Because the majority of these investments have been in commissions to brokers. And I don't see how that creates sustainable advantage.
Because they can leave, because they can go somewhere.
78% of their revenues go to commissions to individuals who will literally walk across the street the same day if you say, I'm giving you 10% more in commission because—
Like the agency business.
Yeah, and the question is, are they making investments in technology that creates so much differentiation and ability to get more deal flow that the brokers say, well, I'm going to stay here. There's some sort of, for example,
magic.
Goldman Sachs could technically pay their traders a little bit less commission because they're just going to get more deal flow. And when you show up at the Goldman Sachs, the one thing I will say about my friends who have left Goldman or Morgan Stanley or McKinsey is they don't realize how powerful a calling card that was. And when they start calling people and say, hey, I want to work with you, I'm retired, I'm just sort of like, their calls aren't returned quite as quickly.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's true. I don't know how much enterprise value Compass is building. So anyways.
I have an excellent real estate agent. I've never talked technology with her once.
So you have an agent at Compass.
Yes.
And if she goes to Prudential or Corcoran, you'll go with her. Yeah. So
I'll go with her.
So that means a lack of enterprise value. They have been able to retain her, but at some point, will she just go to another firm?
Yeah. And there's been no technology that I couldn't find myself on Zillow. You know what I mean? Yeah, like that I couldn't compare
and contrast.
That's what
it feels like. And so these firms trade at that
good
firm.
Good real estate agency.
So Sotheby's.
Fine. They have the best listings. They do have good
Sotheby's
listings.
Sotheby's is a great
but
brand.
It doesn't matter.
It's a great brand. It's part of Realogy. And they trade at 0.25 times revenue. So 0.25 times $3.5 billion would be a $900 million market capitalization. And this thing was supposed to go out of $10 billion. They've cut it to $7 billion. This just feels like a slow burn downwards. And
But WeWork is sort of actualized back to what it's supposed
to
be, correct?
I think their vision— If you have the right guy or gal running the company, things usually work out. And I know Sandeep Matrani, the guy who runs WeWork now, and he's a talented operator. So yeah. Anyways, a year from now or 6 months from now, Compass down, WeWork up.
All right. Okay, that's a good prediction. That's an excellent prediction.
Well, thank you.
And a good one, too.
You're being generous. Praise Jesus. Let's go to church.
But in any case, neither of us are very religious, but we have respect for
people. Yeah, I told you I was.
As long as they get the fuck out of gay people's way and stop trying to ruin their lives.
I told you I was an altar boy in a Catholic church for a while, right?
Really?
Yes, I was touched.
Okay.
Come on, that's good. That's good pedophilia humor.
I'm not even going to dignify that with a response.
Pedophilia humor.
I'm going to get on the phone. I'm going now to interview Anderson Cooper. So I'll talk to you soon.
Seriously, don't go there.
You're still triggered by it.
Don't go there.
I'm not going to talk to
you. No, there's a part of you that likes to hurt me. There's a part of you.
Well, it is April Fool's Day and it worked. So let's just live with it. I know your weak points and it has to do with Ando.
Yeah.
Anyway, Scott, I want you to do, I'm going to do something nice for you since I teased you about Ando, et cetera.
I can't wait. I can't wait for this.
I want you to plug your show, the Prof G Show. It's part of the Vox Media Podcast Network now. Yeah. Tell us about it. Tell us, give us some specifics.
It's kind of more of this, minus the journalistic credibility.
Okay.
No, the Prof G Show. I've done it for a while. We've just joined Vox. We do a breakdown of what I think is the most underreported story in business. And we do Office Hours, which is my favorite part, based on my favorite show that I used to watch with my mom, Frasier. We do kind of a call-in show. And then we do an Algebra of Happiness moment, where instead of trying to jab and take advantage of people's emotions, I try to discuss them. I'm trying to... Anyways.
Give me an example. What moment did you have? Let's have one right here.
What moment did I have?
Yeah, like what is the moment of happiness?
I'm recording. You talked about speaking at being the commencement speaker at your graduation. Mm-hmm. I've been asked to do a lot of record a lot of videos for graduations because they're all virtual now. And
yeah, mine.
And everybody gives you advice in these graduation mm-hmm. videos. And the advice that we were given when I graduated from business school in the 90s was go to work for Dell or Microsoft or go to Russia, which was supposed to be the land of opportunity in the 90s.
Yeah.
And I said, just avoid most of the advice. And the only piece of advice I can give these kids that I know is absolutely true is that they will never regret at that age telling the people who've helped them get to that point that they love them and they appreciate them. That's the only thing when I look back that I wish I'd done more of. And the little that I did, I'm just hugely grateful for.
Oh, you're tearing up. Oh, how lovely. That's
because I didn't work out today because you started this fucking thing early. Now I'm all teared up.
All right. Thank you for doing that.
I need to go do CrossFit.
The Prof G Show is part of the Vox Media Podcast. It's Mondays and Thursdays. You should listen to it. It's an excellent show. And it's here on the Vox Media Podcast Network. So more of Scott. If you don't get enough of
him here, which is a lot. That's what we all need.
More Scott.
Must a dog.
We'll be back on Tuesday. Again, we'll be talking about consequence culture. Go to nymag.com/pivot to submit your questions for the podcast. Don't make fun of me. We're going to have a long debate. I'm bringing someone in who's going to back me on this. In any case, it's called consequences.
Yeah.
All right. Submit your question for the podcast. The link is also in our show notes. Scott, read us out.
Today's show is produced by Camila Salazar. Ernie Entretot engineered this episode. Thanks also to Hannah Rosen and Drew Burrows. Make sure you're subscribed to the show on Apple Podcasts. If you're an Android user, check us out on Spotify. If you liked our show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Pivot from New York Magazine and Vox Media. We'll be back next week for a breakdown of all things tech and business. We all need a place where we can get around friends and strangers, grab hands, and express our gratitude for being a part of something bigger and recognize our blessings. Church.
Applebee's.
Support for the show comes from Atlassian. What do you think of when you hear the word flow? How about a smooth river of collaboration culminating in a shared ocean of positive outcomes across your organization? Atlassian software like Loom, Confluence, and Jira can help you achieve maximum flow across your teams by enabling fast and easy communication and connection no matter what time zone they're in. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unlock flow across your teams at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.